Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Mics to your mouths, boys.
It actually can't.
Why? What do you mean you can't?
Good evening. Welcome to another episode of trying to figure this out,
and now you're trying to figure
my mic has.
Then why are we fixing this right now? Limp. Look at it.
Listen, we all have our technical problems. I had my technical problems. Then Will's camera was displaying the menu, and now I don't even know what's going on with you, Nigel.
It's just a floppy mic.
Yeah, we tried to save some medication to fix that problem.
That's okay. It happens to everybody at some point. It's nothing to be ashamed of, Nigel.
I'm not ashamed. I'm proud.
I'm proud of my limpy mic. Speaking of problems, we have an obligation. Every time I do this to myself, it's like, okay, here's a good idea. We'll do something nice for people that, you know, like we'll do something personal. And then it actually has to happen. And I'm like, I made a mistake. For the Patreon for Safety Third, promised. What's that, Kevin?
It's me.
Esta es una llamada importante del centro de coberturas médicas.
A little background for you guys. I get spam calls in Spanish, and it's like for Obamacare, but I don't know how to make them stop. Like I press every number, and it doesn't stop.
Hola, mi amo Guillermo.
Hola, mi amo Guillermo.
Tengo un gato.
Oh, they hung up. Come on. Was the Spanish that bad?
That's it.
Wow.
What did I say? What was
you
that?
You just said I'm Guillermo.
It's you can't stop it.
Every time I get one for the automotive insurance, they ask you, I don't know what the scam is. It's something about like if you have a new car, they try to do like a three-way call with the dealership or some BS like that, and they get personal information. I don't really understand it. But they always ask me what cars I have, and I say, I just make something up. Like one time I said a Model T. One time I said I had like the four-wheel drive 2019 Gronk truck. And they're like, oh, do you have any other cars? And I'm like, yeah, I also have the 2021 front-wheel drive Gronk. The only way to combat those calls is that everybody just has to pick up the call and like mess with the caller.
I like to answer and I ask them, you know, they say, this is a recorded line. And I said, okay, I just want you to know this is also a recorded line. And they're like, okay.
I don't know. My technique was I just don't answer and then I block the number and I just never get spam calls anymore.
What pisses me off is that they don't want you to waste their time. And so they have an automated system that calls and then waits on the line for a voice. It's like, they're like, absolutely do not even think twice about wasting my time as the spam caller. But then when you pick up, they'll gladly waste your time with the scam.
Yeah, or it's like the automated, hello, we've been trying to reach you. Are you there? Oh, yeah, okay. You know, it kind of like has a fake conversation. Like they can't hear you talking. Then you're like, I'm here. And then they're like, okay, I hear you now. Would you like to contribute more money to your local police department by supporting our highway patrol, you know, fundraising event? Something like that.
I just funny saying that because I haven't had that forever, and it's because I don't answer the phone. If I don't recognize the number, I don't answer.
I kind of like it. I like it.
It provides a little bit of
entertainment. That's Kevin's problem. He enjoys it.
If it was any more.
One time I asked them if they had a extended warranty for somebody with a huge penis.
Yeah.
And then the guy says, like me?
Did he actually?
Yeah, he did.
Respect.
Oh, yeah.
We gotta talk about our obligation. So we made a tier on Patreon for this podcast that after 3 months you get a Polaroid. So we'll take a Polaroid of us and we'll sign it. I feel so weird saying that because it's like, does anybody actually want that sign? But people do, and so whatever.
I mean, we could have done like used underwear or
that's
something.
That's true. That's a lot of underwear, though. But the problem was what I said. What I said is that you would every 3 months you would get one from somebody you haven't gotten one from. So over the course of a year, you could get one from like, you know, me, Kevin, Nigel, Alan. But what I didn't realize is that is a little bit more complicated than it sounds, because now you have to have like a shifting deadline where people who started in between when we started.
Probably should have mentioned this, because the moment I saw that perk, I spoke with Zach, the former editor, and we both went, this is a nightmare that I don't want to be a part of.
It's not that bad if you have the right tool to do it. But now I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, oh my God, I think we might have to like have a spreadsheet with a little script or a piece of custom software, like a small piece of custom software that manages the database.
So does Patreon give you like the date? Can you sort by the date that everybody joined in Patreon for that tier?
You can do this. The problem is it's like you want it to spit out basically an address and a name of what Polaroid goes to that address. That tool doesn't exist.
Here's what we do. If somebody can make that tool, we'll give you a free Polaroid and a free Galaxy Brain subscription.
I think I valued
at $15
for Kevin's
month.
Thinking. Kevin's thinking.
I could do it myself, but I really don't want to do it. I could have guy Evan, this Australian guy working for me, who does a bunch of software stuff, who's been doing a really good job. I might just have him do it. And maybe you can probably connect to the Patreon API. So it's like every month it could download the spreadsheet, figure out, you know, people are in the tier, who they've gotten already, who they need to get, or if they've already gotten everyone, it picks a random one for them. But yeah, anyways, we have to do that. So everyone who signed up for the Patreon when we first started it, I think we're basically coming up now on owing you a Polaroid. So that means we have to, each of us buys a Polaroid camera in a bunch of Polaroid shots, and you just have to take a bunch of selfies.
Like, you know, 200 of them just sitting there.
No, well, I mean, we could. It could be 200, and then we just, like, you send them
here,
and then we'll send them to the company who fulfills the, like, Cat Warehouse merchandise, and then just have them send them out.
This is kind of a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
To be honest.
I remember talking to my mom a couple years ago about trying to figure out, like, how do you do sort of, like, more stuff directly with people? Like, how do you interact directly with people? Because I don't know. I have a lot of fun doing that. Like, I think, like, sending people stuff is kind of a cool experience. But at some point, it becomes, like, too much.
We could cut up the play button on a laser cutter and send that out.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that. I actually don't even know where the play button is. It's somewhere in here still in the box. But like, I remember I helped a friend who did a Kickstarter project years ago, and he was making this camera that would go on a bicycle, and when it tips over, it would like save the footage in like a ring buffer. It would take 5 minutes to clip, very similar to how the Tesla dash cam works, or actually most dash cams work, where it's like 5 minute clips, and it like keeps overriding the oldest one. And okay. If it detects something happen, it like locks certain clips around that event. Anyways,
yeah, like how normal camera. Dash cam works.
Yeah, normal dash cam works. So he like had a bicycle dash camera, basically like 2013 maybe. That's like almost 10 years ago now. He did a Kickstarter campaign, sold like 1,500, had like 3,000 made, and it was essentially like an OEM product. So he worked with a company, you know, I mean, he didn't like make the camera. He worked with a company to use their camera tech and then build into a custom camera solution. And he had to update the firmware. But he had to update the firmware on 3,000 of them.
Oh, no.
And what you don't realize is 3,000 is a lot.
I mean, I realize after doing 500 how much 3,000 is.
Let's say you charge your phone every night with USB.
Yeah.
You plug it in and you unplug it. And there's how many days in a year? 365. So imagine like 7 years or 8 years of plugging a phone in and out. Like the USB cord.
I'm surprised. I wonder if the USB cable started to break. Like, are they even rated for that?
So what he did, I have some pictures. I think it might be on my Instagram, actually. He had USB hubs on USB hubs on USB hubs. So he like maxed out the USB bandwidth of like whatever, how many devices the USB can support.
Oh, yeah.
And basically plugged a bunch of cameras in at the same time. Like pulled a little flap off, plug a bunch of cameras in at the same time.
Oh, the flap.
And then had a script. I wrote a batch script, but he ended up using something else. That basically would drag, it would copy the new firmware file to the SD card on the camera, and then it would like disconnect that device, and then I think we had to like manually power cycle them.
God, holy!
And when you power cycle with the new firmware file, it would install the new firmware. And so, but it was like It was like, imagine like every day, all day, for like weeks. No. I only helped him do it for like one day. And
I guess maybe you could do it like as you ship them out, but I guess they were kind of like all due to be shipped out at once.
Right. He made another mistake too, where he, it actually might be interesting to talk to him on the podcast.
This is giving me anxiety just thinking about that.
It was like the Squid Game stuff, you know, where it's like every little minute task, you get carpal tunnel. I mean, like,
I would just send him out with a note. I would print out 3,000 sheets of paper that says, follow these steps.
But like Squid Game was like another reminder of this. Actually, I think this is the first episode that we've recorded since that video posted. We sat in a room for 10 hours, and I think more. Nigel might have had one of the worst jobs. How did your fingers feel after doing that? Because you took the Squid Game PCB.
Well, they were sore for a day or a couple days.
Because you had to put the clasp on them for the landing.
Oh, if I didn't have plastic gloves, it's impossible.
What were you doing? What was your strategy? Were you sort of like trying to, because you can't do anything with your hands. You sort of have to.
No,
like,
you have to push it on the board and then kind of like snap it on. The problem is the clips were like kind of small and round. Mm-hmm. So it's like if your hands get any sweat on them, you have to hold them. I don't know how to describe it, but like you have to hold them. It's like I have an SD card. I actually do have.
Yeah, that's a good demo. So it's like it's a little like stiff, kind of almost like a carabiner style clip, but it's like there's no spring. It's like a almost like a paper clip. Like it's a, I don't know if you've ever seen a lanyard, they're all kind of the same.
So it has to kind of, you know, snap on there.
Yeah, so you have to put quite
it's
a bit
stiff,
of force.
Though. This is pretty stiff. And it's a lot like, stiffer than you think it is.
You can do one of them easily.
You just have to hold it like that, and you just have to make sure you push and then slide it in. But it's like...
So were your fingers like bruised, like the tips of your fingers?
I think they were just sore, like they just ached.
Here's a good way to do it. Kind of put it on there like...
Yeah, like that's how you have to do it.
Yeah.
But it's like if your fingers get sweaty, the thing just slips. But the thing that was more annoying, honestly more annoying than all that, was the lanyards came as a like in a bird's nest. So Ben was just like picking them up and having to, that was like a whole job in itself, just making them not a bird. So like what would stress me out is when the boards were piling up and I just had a, it's like when you, yeah, it's like, it was a big nest. It was like headphone wires all wrapped up and then boards are piling up. So the faster you go, the worse it is. Ben really helped though. Like him and Tyler spent a lot of their time just like, undoing.
I feel
the,
like that assembly line still even probably could have used like one or two extra people.
And well, I was gonna say the thing that like after I watched your video, there's so much stuff that you can't fit everything.
I know.
But I was like the one factor that I would have liked to see, but I understand that it's hard to fit everything and have it make sense.
Yeah.
Is the fact that like that whole production line was like just if there was one fewer people like one less,
it would
I don't know,
bad.
Fewer per, I can't even speak
one
English.
Less person?
One less person? I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. It would have been a disaster. Yeah. It's like every single person was necessary. But the reason I'm saying this is Tyler and Aista were only there because you had them deliver the boards.
Oh, yeah. If without them.
And they didn't have to stay. They decided to stay because they thought it would be fun. And then I was only there. But I was only there because... You wanted Alan to help solder stuff, and I was like, well, it would be fun just in case if I went. And then I brought my friend.
Yeah, Reggie.
Reggie. Just because I was like, this is a good experience. It'll be fun to come. Like, I want you to come with me and have like a good time. I don't know if that happened, but.
We probably could have corralled some of the Mr. Beast crew, but it would not have been as fun. You know, we could have gotten some.
I had a good time.
That's true.
I had a lot of fun.
Honestly, I liked it.
I'm not sure I could think of a better, like, no matter how horrible it was, because it was horrible. Probably because of the sleep. Lack of sleep was definitely the worst part.
I think the problem was I liked that whole, like, the lanyard part.
Yeah.
It was like what we talked about. It's like, it's stressful, but it's stressful in a way that you're like, I only have one job. And that's all, like, you're just hyper-focused on one thing. And it's just repetitive movements. And you're like, yeah, I'm doing it. Like, you're getting...
I think
reward,
that's
but
something...
there's not much brain power.
Right. That kind of makes me think of like Legos, right? Like it's hard to explain doing kind of like creative work or like where you have to solve like a really complex problem. Mm. Like look at the guy who writes Game of Thrones. What's his name?
George R.R. Martin.
George R.R. Martin. Like he hasn't finished writing the final books. Like, is it because he's lazy, or is it because it's really hard to A, write a book, and then B,
yeah,
close up like loose ends, and you know, C,
yeah,
make the audience happy with how you did it.
It's project creep. That's exactly, yeah, what it is.
And so, like, when someone gives you a job where you just sit there and look at one little thing and do it over, like, that's, I don't know. I feel like sometimes, like, I love doing YouTube, but I think a lot of times people, they vastly underestimate the amount of, like how difficult it actually is. Like, oh, you just sit in your room and make videos. And it's,
you,
like, yeah, I mean,
they,
kind of.
You know, but people expect too much, because, yeah, the more work it is, the less fun it is. And then that kind of comes through in the video. I think the ideal YouTube video is, you know, YouTube back in the day, it's like there wasn't even a concept of being a YouTuber. It was just like some guy having fun and that other people watch. But now there's like too much feedback, yeah, a lot of it negative feedback.
Right.
You know,
I just watched a video from Dan Mace today that he posted yesterday. Remember, he was filming some stuff with Casey Neistat, the South African dude who says bruh. And he filmed a little thing about Logan Paul's new art project, which is like, actually, honestly, I think probably the best way to do NFTs. I know people like, I mean, I don't, but what Logan's doing is he's taking a Polaroid picture. He took one like every day for 99 days. So I think he took more, he like took like 4,000, and they like filtered them and picked the best ones to represent each day, like from the shoots that they were doing. And so it is like an actual art project. And then they're just attaching it to NFTs, which is like, yeah, what, feel however you want about that. But Dan in his video talking to Logan, it's like kind of like a little mini kind of documentary about Logan's project. It was interesting. Basically talks to Logan about how you deal with the audience kind of like expecting things, like you want them to like what you're doing and blah blah blah. And it's like, man, dude, everybody deals with it. Like, everybody deals with that stuff of like that self-consciousness from feedback.
Man, I don't know, after all the other stuff that Logan's done with NFTs.
Honestly, I think if more people did NFTs like this, like, they would not have nearly as bad of a rap. Because this feels like actually art and then combining it with an NFT. Whereas the rest of the NFT ecosystem, I genuinely, it's, I don't want to say a scam, but people are definitely using it as a scam.
That's true. They're not all scams, but a lot of them are.
I think there's enough in the art scams where it is actually like, it's bad.
I would say pretty much any computer generated one is a scam.
Yeah.
Except for maybe the monkey or the Bored Ape, because that's the first one. I think everything else besides that.
Everyone just trying to capitalize on the idea of it.
Yeah. Because it's like, if it's not original, then why are you buying it?
Yeah.
In my opinion, everything else is kind of like knockoff.
But I think at the end of the day, like, that's kind of my thought on creating content, like you were saying about the original YouTube, old YouTube, where it's like people just sort of messing around, having fun. It was less like serious projects, you know, people kind of, I don't know, doing whatever. And now everything seems to be, I don't know, I like doing stuff where it's like, I want to try something, I want to do this thing, I'm gonna make a video about it.
That's why you gotta make shorts, man.
Yeah, shorts kind of solve the problem, but
no, they don't.
It'll circle back to exactly the same problem, I think.
They create their own problems.
What I'm trying to say, though, is that our Patreon support, Big Brain, Galaxy Brain, Polaroid Project, is our new NFT. No. This podcast was sponsored by Brilliant.org. We have a sponsor for today's podcast. It's Brilliant. Well, the sponsor is Brilliant. The best way to learn anything is by doing it yourself, and Brilliant lets you learn interactively with hands-on lessons in math, science, and computer science. These interactive courses help you learn faster than just watching lecture videos. Want to learn about data structures in computer science? They have an interactive course. Want to learn about multivariable calculus? Do you like pain and stuff? Actually, multivariable, I think, is the easiest calculus, even though it took me 2 times to pass it in school. Yep, that's right. They have an interactive course on multivariable calculus. Instead of just memorizing, Brilliant teaches you how to think about STEM by guiding you through fun problems. You'll get practice with real problem solving that helps you train your critical thinking and creative problem solving skills. Join the millions of people already learning on Brilliant with a special offer just for listeners. Head to brilliant.org/safetythird. Get your tail out of there. Head to brilliant.org/safetythird to get started for free with Brilliant's interactive lessons. The first 200 listeners will also get 20% off an annual membership. Thank you to Brilliant for sponsoring this episode of the podcast.
All right. I want to mention something about the Squid Game project that I don't, you know, you might want to mention some other things that you didn't get to in the video. But one of the problems that Will never mentioned that kind of drove me especially crazy, and I wanted to strangle Will because of this is, see these little lanyards? They were hitting this little microcontroller right there, and they were shorting it out, and a couple people, maybe about 10 people, their squib burst.
Kevin, we had to... I still don't know if that's actually the problem.
It was definite. I've done it.
I don't think so.
This was the reason.
Will, I agree with Kevin for two reasons. A, he tested it, and it did make it go off, and one of them that went off, we witnessed it. She bent, I forget it was he or she, bent down, the lanyard thing touched it, a spark went off, and then the thing popped. Like, I think I might even have it on camera.
The reason I say that I'm still not sure is because even after we taped them all, we were still having it happen.
We had to
tape. We believe that was more user error.
Every single one. Two pieces of duct tape right here and right here. I said, why can't we put a piece of duct tape over this? Over
don't
the
mess
whole...
with the antenna. We can't, because you can't mess with the antenna. And
no,
the
it's a, that's not how it works, Will. It's
Kevin,
a, it's,
Kevin.
It goes through
Kevin.
Walls.
Just
it's Wi-Fi.
Kevin, you tape, man.
But here's the thing.
Okay.
The chance that it wouldn't is pretty high. It wouldn't mess with it. But do you really want to take that chance and ruin Mr. Beast's Squid Game?
I think that was it. I think everyone was so paranoid that it's just like... he would rather have like 10 pop squibs than sitting there and just sweating at maybe it blocked the antenna.
It's like protocol, right? Like the reason protocols exist is because you're not allowed to break the rules, because if you break the rules, everything becomes open to interpretation. And it's like, will putting tape over the antennas block it? No. Is there some maybe very horrible weird thing that could happen that would screw the whole project up, and it's like a 0.01% chance of that happening? So like what's the best way to do it is like to wrap the lanyard with tape, and I don't know. It's one of those things where if we had more time, it wouldn't have been a problem.
You could put a conformal coating on the PCB.
We thought about doing conformal coats and stuff, but like there was no time.
Yeah, because that would have been like one extra day, and it just wouldn't have worked.
And even then, like what if it's like a static charge issue? Like what if it's static electricity that's causing the boards to short? And it's not actually the lanyard. It's like maybe it's a coincidence. It's like you don't really know until you like thoroughly test it out. And if you don't have time to thoroughly test it, like you're just playing a game.
I'm on Kevin's side, 100%.
No, I mean I'm on your side too. I'm just saying like imagine.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? I just like I'm all okay for risk, but in like a situation like that, like do you want to be the person who made a call to try something that then like completely messes everything up, and then it's just like. I'd rather have a couple more squibs blow up and just fix those than deal with.
Well, that was Kevin's position. He's like, I'm just here to help, man. If it all fails because of, you know, Will agreeing with me, it's like I'd rather just, you know.
Yeah.
No responsibility.
Dude, there's a lot of stuff where it's like, there's no clear answer.
There was a few things that happened. I think it was with me. I don't remember what they were. But like I made a suggestion and I was pretty sure of it. But again, the same thing as Kevin. I'm like. If this isn't true, I'm not taking responsibility.
Like what we should have done if we had been like, I mean, what we do next time is just get lanyards with plastic clasps.
Wait, next time? Isn't there no next time?
No, I'm just saying, you know, like if this wasn't like a one-off, I don't think I would. Well, no, I wouldn't. Unless they wanted, if they
didn't
wanted
we talk to, about, we said, how long will it take to remember this as a good time? I asked that.
Is there a word for like I'm trying to figure out how to describe the whole process of that, because it was like I'm afraid to say this, but like I would say it was one of the worst times of my life, but it was also one of the greatest experiences of my life, like from being able to just like, you know, start up a little hardware project like that and have insane amounts of money to throw at it that like I would never be comfortable spending. You know, my own money doing something like that. I'd be like, that's insane. Like, I'll just wait a bunch of time. And so I learned a lot, and we got to see a lot of, like, behind the scenes of Mr. Beast stuff. We got to hang out with Jimmy. But that 3 weeks was really rough.
You had it the roughest, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, even before we showed up, me and Alan were just, like, almost laughing at how bad your life was when you called us
for,
in
like,
Colorado.
2 weeks before I saw you guys.
I'm saying you were like calling us from Colorado, saying you're in the video. You're like, I'm in a parking lot just waiting. Alan and we were like, this is bad. Like, this is like, we're like, this guy's dead before we even showed up. I want to say the part that I found one of the hardest was that, like, I know nothing about electronics. I don't know anything about programming. And it's like, at least Kevin knows, he knows way more than I do, but I'm saying that, like, you guys designed the board. Mm-hmm. Kevin didn't, so it's like, but at least he, if you explained it to him, he would understand. I don't get anything.
Right.
So I found the hardest thing for me was at the event when people who worked on the Mr. Beast team thought that I had even a remote clue as to anything that was happening. Like, I didn't know. I learned as the days went on.
Right.
But it's like, I didn't really understand what a squib was when I showed up.
Dude, that was like, I wonder how many people in the video that are watching the video even know what a squib is. Because that was like, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how do I explain what a squib is? Like, had you ever seen a squib before this? I mean, I guess if you've seen the Hollywood video.
Yeah, I knew the things that popped and everything. I just didn't know, like, the word. You taught me the word, basically.
Right.
There were multiple times there where, like, a Mr. Beast employee came up to me, and they're like, come here, like, how to fix this. And they show me some technical thing, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that I don't know how to fix it. I actually don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
But I felt I was in this position that
you had to, like, give them some sort of
if
answer.
If I said I didn't know what I was talking about, it would scare them because they thought that I was a person of authority. So I would have to, like, pretend that I
don't know how,
like,
how they didn't figure that out at some point. There was really only a couple people that they, like, should have been going to. Like, they should have been going to, like, me, George, or Harlan.
They were asking me, like, high-level, like, you know, management questions about the whole production. And I'm like, Like, yeah, that sounds fine. Go do that.
Yeah, it's just like, but you feel like you can't just say you're incompetent because it would be like, it would look bad. So you just, you have to figure out how to not give them an answer, but seem like you know what you're talking about.
I'm like, yeah, I think that sounds good. Let me go, check with it. If that's good with the other guys, we'll let you know.
I think a few times Kevin came back and was like, they mentioned something. He just throws out a few keywords. I'm not exactly sure what they're talking
data,
about.
Big data, synergy.
Something about like Wi-Fi, ubiquity, airdrops,
pods,
I don't know.
AirPods.
Yeah. But then you or George would be like, okay, who was it? You'd say what they looked like and they would just
leave and fix it. The bald guy that speaks with a Finnish accent. They're like, oh yeah, okay, that's the
I think after a while though, they realized that, like you said, there was you, George, and Harlan were like, when they had a problem, you just like, you were always there when the problem was solved, where it seemed probably like me, Kevin, and other people always had to confer with other people. So they just, and then one of you guys showed up, so they're like, we're just gonna not ask them anymore.
Yeah, because we fixed all of the problems with the PCB and the igniters and all of that. All that was ready to go for this, you know, Mr. Beast Squid Game. But then all of the networking problems started to happen. And it was like, that was a nightmare. And it wasn't even like they started to happen. It's just like, you know how stuff is. You gotta,
you know the part,
your Wi-Fi at home drops out randomly. It doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. It's just like something like that happens. And then it's like, you know, why did that happen? Or is that something that we caused? So everybody had to find out what's going on. And everybody that was like the guards, you know, the Squid Game guards in the red jumpsuits, the phones would, you know, there's a problem. Everybody had a phone. There's a problem. So I had to go through about 100 phones and, you know, change some Wi-Fi setting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, you choose like the right Wi-Fi network.
Dude,
I had to put all the right Wi-Fi networks in. I had to turn on some, like, you know, I don't even know what
to call it. There was one thing I remember where the devices were on a different Wi-Fi network than the Raspberry Pi that was acting as the web server. So there was like this weird like trickle through where like somehow the data was like migrating through networks and there was like a delay, but it worked. And so we just like didn't touch it.
Yeah, it would work and they would explode, but it wouldn't show that they exploded for a while.
Yeah.
And then if you hit it again, it would mark them as not exploded.
Right.
So they had to fix that delay.
There was another thing too. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff too. Some of it we like won't talk about, but like the igniters were rocket motor igniters, and we had ordered a bunch, and so we shipped them from California because this was like essentially the electronic ignition. It's like the rocket motor igniter provides the ignition source, which then burns a couple pieces of like firework fuse, which is encapsulated inside of a little container with a hole in it, and the gas vents out the side of the hole and melts through the plastic. So it's not explosive. It's not like an open flame. It just creates like directed hot gas.
It's like putting a match up against a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, basically.
Is.
But you need quite a bit of heat because the water will quickly wick away. And so you have to inject a lot of energy quickly to melt the plastic.
You can actually boil water in a plastic bottle.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. So, like,
you need a lot of heat really fast, like concentrated through the little hole.
Like when you talked about it, Will, when you first said, you're like, can I just shoot like some fire on a plastic bag? I originally said, I'm like, probably not.
And it doesn't work. Like you have to have a bunch of energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a quick blast. You really have to do that.
And you know what's something interesting that we discovered kind of like after we finished, but it didn't matter, is they actually make resistors, little resistors purposefully made to catch on fire and spark. They're called like pyrotechnic PCB resistors. And it's a thing, like, but they cost like $4 each.
Oh, really? That.
Yeah. They're like 08, 05 yeah. size. And they,
$4
you know,
each.
Is that how when like in movies, when the servers explode, they just have a bunch of those?
Oh, maybe.
But we got these rocket motor igniters and we shipped them, but they got shipped like 3-day shipping instead of overnight because we were overnighting everything. So they got shipped 3-day shipping, and it's like Sunday, or it's like Friday or Saturday. I think Saturday. And we're like, where's that box? Like we're looking for this green. It was a HelloFresh box because you just like, you know, use an old box here. And it was nowhere to be found and we didn't know the tracking number. And so what happened was we threw George, whose house I went to like build the squib when we assembled it, his dad does rocketry, and so his dad called a bunch of people, and we just like this rocket network like bled out until we found a source of igniters, and there was one source in New York, but that was like too far. But we ended up finding someone like across the state, like 3 hours away. And so,
well, I was going to say, you were even suggesting before you found that guy, you were asking me or somebody else if we could fly to New York
and get a rental car
to pick it up or whatever, like go there really quick to get it. And I just landed in North Carolina. Yeah.
And long story short, we ended up buying rocket igniters from this old dude for like $1,000 and for all of them. And they were pretty nice igniters too, so I don't think he totally ripped us off. But he basically was like, well, I'm not...
There's way too much wire.
He's like, you have to be here before 8 p.m. or something. And we're like, it was like 3 hours away. And we sent one of the Mr. Beast assistant to go do it. And like, we're not going to get there by 8 p.m. And he's like, can you, if you stay up, we'll pay you another $1,000. And he's like, okay. So we literally paid this guy $2,000
to stay up
for probably like a couple hundred dollars worth of rocket motor igniters past 8 p.m.
Yeah.
The part that I wanted to say was that all of the, because remember the original way you built them didn't work.
Mm.
Because you showed in the video, like sparks flew.
Right.
They so you had sealed. To, on the fly, redesign them. Yeah. I think you redesigned them. Was it the day? It was the day before.
It was the day of.
The day of that we did all the mass production. Yeah. And you needed straws. And we found out that McDonald's straws were the optimal
they could hold
size and thickness.
Two little cuttings of a black powder fuse, like a centimeter long, that you would put in there, and then you would crimp it shut with like a heat sealer.
And we had heat sealers. We'd heat seal one end of the straw, stick the fuse and the igniter in, then put hot glue on top
to cut
of
a
it,
hole.
And then clamp it shut with pliers to like, because you couldn't really heat seal it again with the wire. I mean, you probably could have, but whatever. And then poked a hole in the top. In the side. We still ended up using some of the tape ones, too, that were made out of masking tape.
Yeah, they did work.
It didn't really matter that much.
It didn't. Yeah. But the McDonald's ones did work. The thing that I wanted to say, which I thought was funny, was when we needed straws, you sent me out to go and get them. And we're like, we don't think... none of the stores were open at that time.
Right.
Because everything closed early.
It's all drive-through.
Well, no, I'm saying the stores were closed. So I was just I couldn't go to Walmart to get straws.
I think, was it just straws in general and you ended up at McDonald's or
something? Yeah, so we were like, you have to go
and
somehow...
Because we tested the straw from a...
Because we had had
got
McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, right.
And it worked and it was consistent. And Tommy did like 8 tests. He was, you know, frantically testing. Yeah. So I went on a mission with Reggie to go and find straws. But we're like, the only places that have them are fast food restaurants. And you're like, we need at least 100. And I was just like, but it's COVID, so they don't have them out. So I couldn't just go in and steal them. Or I think I went out. I think they did have a couple, but there was like 3. So it's like, you can't.
And
so I went.
The
I remember,
social engineer, the McDonald's employee.
But, so what happened was I went to like the little self-serve menu at McDonald's. And I was like, okay, I can get a small drink for like 50 cents or something. So worst case scenario, it's like $50 or $60 for the straws. I'll just buy 60 waters and then just whatever. I was like, worst case scenario. But I'm like, I might as well ask. It was one of the weirdest interactions I've ever had. because we walked up to the where you receive your food, or I think it was actually the cashes. We walk up and the manager is like, "Can I take your order?" And I just go, "This might be an odd question. Can I just have buy a bunch of straws? Can I just have a bunch of straws?" And he's like, he just looks at me and goes, "How many do you need?" And I'm like, "At least 100. He didn't even say anything. He just turned around and walked away. And so I turned to Reggie. I'm like, okay, like, I don't know what's happening.
On us.
he just walked to the back. And I was like, I don't know what he's doing. And then I just see him like walking around a bit, like just doing stuff. Then he walks back to the back. Then he comes back with like a paper McDonald's bag filled with straws. And he just hands it to me and then walks away. He doesn't even say, "Here, enjoy," nothing. There was not even a question.
Bless that man. To elaborate, leaves.
That guy has no idea.
He did. Shout out to the McDonald's in Greensville, North Carolina. You saved Mr. Beast's Squid Game.
It wasn't even like, it was the weirdest interaction because not only did he not ask, it wasn't even like, he went, "Okay," like, or "You're welcome," nothing. The moment I asked was just silence until I got the straws, and then we just left.
What are the chances of that happening versus them just telling you to piss off?
I think the conclusion we had was that stuff like this must happen there. Like, there might be Mr. Beast employees who just go around and ask for stuff, and they just were like, "That's here in Montreal, if you did that, the first question is why."
Maybe if it was just like the tax he had to pay to get you out of the store. He's like, "I don't want to deal with this guy. Just take the 100 straws."
But he did work to like get me those straws. It's just so odd that he didn't even say like, "You're welcome." He just literally handed it to me and then walked away.
Is this the birth of the McDonald's straw challenge? Yes. Walk into a McDonald's and ask for straws and see how many you can get.
No, God, no. They did us a favor.
1,000.
All I know is that I learned a lot of very valuable lessons and a lot of things in general on this, on that project, and you know, somehow still made a mistake of offering people handmade items, which have a logistical nightmare attached to them of keeping track of who ordered, who signed up for Patreon to win, and how
long
ago.
The moment I saw that, I had a brain aneurysm.
It's, you know, we'll figure it out. How bad could it be?
But I was going to say, the part is, I didn't tell you because I'm like, "Oh, that's Will's problem," because I don't know why.
It'll be
fine. In my head, somehow you were handling everything. I didn't realize that I had to take Polaroids.
Well, I mean, you can come here and I'll take Polaroids of you.
I'm just saying, in my head, I'm like, "That's his problem. He can deal with it." Then I realized that by not speaking up, it was my problem the whole time.
You guys fly to Los Angeles, like Kevin's been flying a lot, and then we'll have.
But that's more work than the Polaroids.
No, yeah, but at least it'll be fun.
I have to see you and take the Polaroids. That's horrible.
Bullshit.
Let's go to Canada. Are we allowed in Canada yet?
Yeah, wait. Why don't we just do it a month from now in Florida? I mean, it's going to be late for people. Are they going to care?
That's a good point. I mean, if we're all there.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll just do it just so we can get on top of things and figure out how to keep a database. To keep track of.
So I think it would make more sense if it was like one poll. Like, it was every 3 months is the tough part, because it's like you said, you have to keep resetting the clock and tracking. Maybe if you say whoever signed up between like January and March will get a Polaroid ship.
Yeah, like
this,
a 3 month window.
Yeah. So it's like,
yeah,
if
but
you
then people
signed up.
3 months is a pretty big window. That's the only problem. Is like,
I would just ship them, is what I would do. I wouldn't even waste time.
Yeah, but what about
it
3 months from now?
Then everybody gets another one. I mean, you're always going to have people that like just join and try to get it and then
here
leave.
This is the only way to do it that I can think of. You get a random Polaroid, no guarantee which one you're going to get.
It's like collector cards.
Yeah.
I like that. That's the only thing I can say.
You have to stay subscribed long enough to collect them all. Watch, there's like, "I got like 8 Kevins."
Are you kidding? That's a win.
You only get one person.
Like, it's
going to
be kind of
over.
Like Exodia. It's going to be me like this on one card. It's going to be me like that on the other card.
Oh, yes.
And then this is the final card.
You can build the whole
Kevin. You need the 6th card, the dong, the secret dong card.
No, you need 5 cards just for that.
I went to like a Dave & Buster's, but like a different brand in Texas like last year, and they had this like SpongeBob. What's the coin cliff game where you put the
thing?
Yeah,
you
the
mean?
Pusher.
I don't know what it's called,
pusher.
But I know what you mean.
And so one of the things, you know, some of these machines are fancy. They put a bunch of other crap in there too, and it's just like tokens. It's not a casino. It's an arcade, and they'll put like plastic coins, like big, like kind of casino coins or like chips, or they'll put cards. And so the cards have like, I think it was Wizard of Oz characters. And we got every single Wizard of Oz character except for one. I think it was like the dog or something. And I was looking around the entire machine and I'm like, there is not a single dog card here. And I'm like, this is bullshit. This entire game is rigged because you can get six cards, but to get the seventh card and get the huge bonus, you can't get it because it doesn't exist, because they only put like two in the stack. So there's a bunch of every card except one card. So that like 3,000 ticket bonus isn't for collecting seven. It's literally just for getting the dog, basically.
So you'd have to bring all the cards up to the counter or something, and they give you your...
Because I remember going up to the counter, and I complained. Yeah. I'm just like, hey, like, there's no dog in the machine. How are we supposed to get the bonus? And he's like, oh, they only put, like, one in the pack. And I was like, oh. So it's a scam.
Convenient.
Yeah.
I don't know how that stuff like that. I mean, when it's real money, I guess it makes more sense that it's illegal. But, dude.
Arcades taught me not to gamble at a casino from a young age. Like, hitting that button and watching the light, like, continue on for another couple blinks after you push the button.
And you know you hit it on time.
I know you hit it.
I mean, Mark did that, right? Mark did it. Mark made a...
Yeah.
Well, there's a YouTube video as well where they've... I don't think it was Mark's. It was like the stacking one where the guy actually showed that it does...
Oh, yeah, the one with the lights that go across. And you got to like line up three and then three and then three.
I don't know how that's legal.
Then it becomes two.
Isn't that how pinball machines... Like, pinball machines were almost banned because they were considered gambling and they had to prove that it was actually a game of skill.
I mean, pinball definitely feels like skill.
I think there is more skill, but like some of these arcade machines are actually straight up a rigged system.
No, there's some for sure ones. Like you go to, I mean, we don't have Dave and Buster's here, but when I go in the US and our equivalent like arcades here, there are a few of them where you're just like, it's just basically like Kevin said, kid gambling. Like it's completely rigged and you can't win. Like even the coin one you said is pretty... I mean, I guess that's a bit skill, but it's like it's so deceptive because you always think it's so.
That's just a game of numbers.
That's just a game. That one I feel like is fair up until putting the freaking cards, the plastic cards, but only one of them has like, you know, rarity to keep you from getting the full set bonus. That's bullshit.
What about
otherwise,
the game
is totally fair.
The ones where like you go to the arcade game and it's just you spin a wheel.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
And it's just... You just spin a wheel. That's it.
Like, I know.
I'm pretty sure they do that at the casino. So.
Yeah, and you got to, like, hit the stop button or something like
that.
No,
Kevin. I'm saying, like, it's literally just a wheel.
Oh, that's boring.
You just spin it, and whatever it lands on is what you get.
Here's my wager. I bet you if you took half the arcade games in existence and stuck them in a casino, they would be illegal.
Yeah.
I bet you. I think that they the games in an arcade violate the rules that control casino games, like actual gambling.
Yeah. You have to have like proven odds or something, I'm pretty sure, with that.
But the instant it's an arcade where you get tickets and prizes, then it's a problem. Which to me, like, the prizes are garbage anyways. Like, how much money could they possibly cost? Like, why do you rig the games like that?
So it's like gambling by... Like, I mean, it's just proxy gambling, right? Did you ever... I don't know what it's called, like the pachinko or something in Japan.
Oh, yeah, okay. With the metal balls that...
Yeah. I remember my cousin lives there and he was telling me about it. We did go and it's just like you like
those
fall apart from the light stimulation when you go there and the noise. But he was telling me how he's like, gambling's illegal. But then it's like, why do people do it? And he was just like, his explanation was, he goes, you go there, it's just a fun game, but you get like tokens or whatever, you get proof.
Don't you
how many
get
like
steel balls, like that's the currency.
Yeah.
And then you,
but
you like
get
sell them,
and then you, well, you get
price?
The balls,
I
and
know.
I think,
no.
Well, no, you get the. You, he was like saying, he goes, the way the system that he was showing us worked. I don't know if it's the same all around Japan, but he was like, you get the steel balls, and I think you put them in a machine there, and like it prints a ticket saying that you had that many. So, quote, the next time you come back, you can continue playing with all your steel balls. And he goes, but, you know, just coincidentally, there's some, you know, steel ball enthusiasts down the street who are willing to take your coupon for steel balls in exchange for goods or money or whatever.
Nice.
So it's like, I mean, they're just enthusiasts. They're just buying it so they can go play the game.
That is genius.
So it's like, it's illegal, but it's like, there's just these, It's basically just they took the cashier's center and just made it down the road.
There's something like this in Florida. There used to be.
It was Florida. Yes, it was with Kevin. And it was like there's two businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Unaffiliated. They're not affiliated.
Phone, it's like international phone minutes, like on a calling card.
It's like, how can we make something that's not money, but is so obscure that you can't easily inflate it?
Nobody wants it.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, they literally have a casino where the money is, like, funneled in with, like, a obscure gift card that nobody would ever
nobody
be able
can
to, like,
use.
Buy. Yeah. Like, imagine going to, like, Mexico and finding this weird restaurant that has a gift card you can buy that you can never buy in the States, and you have to do it only in person, and you buy a bunch of those gift cards, and then you bring those to your casino, and you give those to people. Where it's like, you've created a thing that can't be inflated easily, but nobody actually wants it, so you can only trade it in for things. Like, it's insane. But genius. It's genius. Actually, it's genius.
Yeah, so you go in there, and you buy. There's, like, a machine in there that vends out. You put in a $20 bill, and you get, like, you know, 2,000 minutes to call Brazil with or something like that.
It's a non-fungible. It's a very difficult fungible token.
Wait, so Kevin, so what do you do with that thing?
You like swipe it at, you know, the slot machines.
You pay slots and phone minutes.
Yes.
And then it gives you phone minutes back, and then you can go and get like prizes. I don't think you can get money, right? But you can get like actual legitimate.
No,
prizes,
you
like
you can get money.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Will, it makes sense though, because a lot of people want to call Brazil.
The only way they can afford to do it is by
buying these obscure calling cards.
Oh God. I think it'd be fun to do one of those arcade scam things. I feel like it's kind of saturated at this point, but like try to figure out how do you get all the coins off of one of those coin pushers? Like, can you reach like a resonant frequency of a quarter or something and like try to get the whole table to vibrate? Because a lot of them have like bobs. But the plumb bob won't be affected by, like, you know, high energy, low frequency, or high frequency, like low amplitude vibrations.
So when I went to an arcade recently, it was funny because obviously when they have the prizes, they're like, you can win this PS4, 400,000 tickets. You do the calculations. You're like, I have to spend like $8 million. But we went to the arcade and we're talking to the guy. He clearly didn't care. He was just like, there's one of these games here. And he goes, we have a guy who comes here every day to play it. And I actually said, I'm like, that's kind of sad. He goes, no. He goes, he has a scheme going. He goes, the guy working there is telling us the scheme. He goes, there's a daily bonus if you beat the high score, but it resets daily or something. So he goes, he shows up at like the moment it opens. It's in a movie theater. He shows up the moment it opens. And he gets the first high score, but he goes, he just beats the computer high score by like a point. And then he goes, it's kind of hard, but then he'll go and actually get another high score. And I think there might be a limit of 2 bonuses per day or something, but he goes, the bonus is like a lot of points.
So is it a bonus every time you beat the high score, or is it whoever has the highest score at the end of the day?
It's something like it gives you 2 bonuses at most, like every day.
Okay.
So it's like the first one he beats is like whatever's built into the computer, and then he just beats it again, and then he leaves. Mm. It's something like that. So he was saying that he gets like 2,000 points a day, for like a dollar or two.
I was thinking, what if it was like whoever has the highest score at the end of the day gets the bonus, and so it's like what he does is he comes in and he sets
a high
score.
Yeah, but most people they don't come back for their bonus tickets. They go to the arcade, they win. They buy their candy, they go home.
No, but so Kevin, what he does is he saves up. And so the employee was telling me that he does it every day and gets like 1 or 2,000 points. I don't know what it was. And it costs him like $2. Whereas normally getting that much would cost you probably like $40.
Yeah.
But he pointed out, he goes, the guy is going to come in soon and get a Nintendo Switch, which is like 100,000 points.
For only 3 times the MSRP.
No, but he goes, it's 100,000 points, which when I went and played for like $30, I got like 3,000 points. I think it was like, we calculated, it was like $50 for the Nintendo Switch. Whereas if I played normally without that bonus stuff, it would probably be like $3,000 for the
Switch. I feel
Switch.
Like that's such a commitment.
It is. It's way
I
too
know.
Much.
And you have
like,
to wait a third
that
of
Nintendo
a year.
Switch.
Like, go get a job. Like,
nobody else has that kind of time.
Wait, no.
You know?
But Will has a point. Like, even if it takes him an hour per day, but if it takes him a month to get it, that's 30
right.
hours.
Right.
And if the Switch is only $300, right. It's like, he could, he could literally just work at the movie theater.
The only way it's justifiable if it's like his sort of like daily tradition.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like, it's like, you know, waking up and doing a crossword puzzle. I mean, I don't know if you can do that, but like
playing the arcade game.
Playing the arcade game where it's kind of like
maybe it's like on his way to work.
So I find it kind of funny that you're pointing out that even scamming the system isn't worth your time.
Yeah.
No.
Well, not like so that. You're totally screwed.
The system is built for you to fail. Like, you can't even scam it. Like, the only opportunity to steal from it is actually still just a huge waste of time. It's
still not even worth it. Yeah, if you add it up, he's probably like equivalently making less than minimum wage. Like significantly less than minimum wage. Oh, yeah. He might as well just work at the movie theater part-time and then go and buy it.
Alex Ernst was doing this thing, and I was helping him for a while, where we would go to thrift stores and we would find DVDs, Disney DVDs, that had the redemption code, and you would enter it onto their app, and it would give you it was a similar system where you could build up points to get stuff, like, you know, and you could get, like, you know, for high point values, you could get tickets, you could get like behind the scenes tours and stuff like that, but you had to have like, I mean, I don't even think buying every movie in their catalog would have done it. You would have to, like, buy shit multiple times, which is like,
it's like, who's this aimed at? Right. Nobody can win this.
And so what we were doing is just looking through like stacks and stacks and stacks of DVDs and taking pictures of the codes and then entering them in. And he was building codes up pretty fastly because it turns out nobody does that because it's just sort of stupid. But then he started getting paranoid of like, what if you do all this and you try to redeem a code and they say, well, show us like the receipts or show us proof that you still have the DVDs or something like that. And so he never did anything. I wish he would have followed through. I wonder if it's still something that he can...
I would like to see that. When he told me about that, I thought it was pretty cool. I've never heard of something
good video
like that.
Too,
what a scheme.
Like how I scammed that's a good Disney, scheme. But like the scam ends up wasting like obscene amounts of his time and like traveling around and going to, you know, it's like at the end of the day, it's like everybody lost Disney.
And it's like you get a backstage tour with the equivalent value of $200. And you're like, it took me a year to do this.
The only thing that even makes it somewhat redeemable is the fact that you don't have to buy the DVDs.
Yes. Oh, if you had to buy it, you're done.
Open it, take a picture.
Just open it, exactly. And then you close it. Yep, because it's already been opened. It's one of those things where it's like for a kid. This is like a kid thing where it's like you don't have a job. You can't get a job. But you have the one resource you have infinite of, and it's time.
Yep.
There's really nothing more terrifying than a kid.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Motivation and time.
Because kids are crafty. Like, I could break into any school computer, basically. Like, no password could keep me out. My mom trying to keep me off of the computer, you know, I'd always find a way back on the computer.
I got banned from my computer lab for a little bit because I stole the administrator computer password.
Yeah, I did that.
I did something. I don't know if I shared something I never got in trouble. Did I share the one with the typing program?
You told me that.
So there's that. There's like two stories. One is my dad would shut the power off to my room to turn my computer off because he didn't like me being on the computer. Even though, look at me, joke's on you, Dad, I'm on the computer all day every day now. You can't stop me. And so I realized there was a second circuit going to my room, so I ran an extension cord from that outlet to my computer. Then he figured that out, and then using the power of anime and God, I crawled into the breaker room and wired three circuits together to create the ultimate 60
no way
amp, 320 amp breaker surprise. An actual literal fire hazard.
You deserve
my dad
at that
point gave up.
That point.
He couldn't figure it out, and I was like, "All right, Dad, I'll undo it, but don't turn my power off." And he was like, "All right."
That's pretty
good. I think I wired it hot too, because that's like I couldn't turn the power off, or they would know. So I did everything with the lines live. And then in high school, the thing that I never got in trouble for, that they were so mad, like they were so pissed off. There was in ninth grade a typing program, and the default password and username for the administration account was what they left it at, because, you know,
don't say
teaching
admin
a computer class. Yeah, it was like admin password. And so someone figured this out, and I went in and started changing the lessons, because you could go in and modify the actual typing lessons. And, you know, I mean, you could imagine what a ninth grade high school kid would do.
Oh yeah,
they started off normal and just started getting wildly inappropriate, like the deeper you got into it. They were so mad, and I remember I was
did they know it was
out.
You
no they couldn't figure it out, because they were like, we, you know, we can track everything on the computers, blah blah blah, you
sure
know, like, come
yeah,
forward
sure
now and you'll get in less trouble. And it's like, you know, my you know, I'm not a dumbass. Right. Like, that's a risk I'm willing to take. So I didn't say anything and never got in trouble.
That's what you say when you are completely out of options.
Yeah. Yep. We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. You know,
they go, we track everything. Then you already know who it is.
I know. Like, but then they try to put, you know, like twist it as like an honor thing. Oh, if you have honor, we'll get you in less trouble kind of thing. And it's like, I have no honor. Why? And I'm not afraid to admit it.
But it's like, think about that situation. It's like, if you know who it is, why would you, like, that situation still makes no sense.
Yeah, but if you're a kid, you're like terrified.
I know, I get that. So I was gonna say what I did. I don't remember it too well. It was weird. It was a program. It's kind of a security flaw. When you think about it, I burnt a program to a disk, and this was a service you could pay for. I don't remember how I got it for free. You just put the disk in, and when you boot the computer up, it would just like all, I don't know, these like numbers would come up. And I don't know if I didn't have a phone at the time. I don't know if you wrote them down. I remember how I copied them.
Were you just like running a brute force cracking program?
Well, you could type it into a website, and it just tells you what the local passwords were on the Windows computer.
Wow. So it's like you type in the password hash or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Encrypted
and
password.
It would decrypt it.
Yeah.
And just give you the password. But what happened was the computers we had in that room would always reset. They were all just like server computers, kind of. Like every time you restarted it, it would be a new computer. But there would always be an admin account. And then that admin account, the password they used on that was the same one that they used for their server admin. So we were able to log into the server admin by getting the password to the local computer. And then you have access to everybody's folders, all the teachers' folders.
I feel like school IT like used to be really, really bad.
It was extremely bad. Back when it was the golden age.
Of messing with
Yeah,
shit.
you could install StarCraft on like the local direct or like, you know, the system-wide directory, and then everybody could play the same game of StarCraft, like launching it from the main server or something like that.
So I'm remembering what I did. Since we had admin access and it wiped every time, they wouldn't be able to track it. But that's what we did, was you could just go into the admin account and then make your own account, like with all the permissions. So then, you could, I mean, you can't really install a game. It was so small, you get caught. But it's like everything they'd prevent you from doing on the computers, you just had free reign.
Yeah, this was like back in the day, you know, and they would try to block you from getting on websites.
Yeah.
But all they would do is put some like basic content filter on the internet. Yeah. So all you had to do was go to like, you know, onlinevpn.com.
Yeah.
And then you could go to my free math.
Oh, yeah. You used to be able to type in IP addresses too. Instead of going
to
the
domains.
Yes,
we did that.
Oh, okay.
And there's the other one too, where it was like, what Kevin said, there's like a website that you could just type the website in and you'd browse the website through.
It's
the
like
other
a proxy
one or something.
Yeah, it's called like Hide My Ass one of them.
I think I used something like that.
Oh, God.
But then I remember the school started, they gave up and they started just like blocking keywords, I think. But the problem is if that keyword popped up on a website.
Oh, you know,
like,
really sad.
Like if it noticed it loading it in a page, it would like just not load it or something. But it started messing with.
We had that freedom.
Yeah.
And then we are
nothing
of the
bad
age.
Happened.
Like, we are the people who cracked down on it.
Yeah.
That's
and
how
nothing
we know
bad
how
happened
to crack
to
down.
Us.
That's bullshit.
It really sucks.
Okay. We'll see you guys on the Safety Third Patreon clip. If you guys want to participate in that, there's a link. Go to Patreon. You can support any of the tiers and you get access to the
Don't
Discord
do the one
server.
For a Polaroid, though. Don't do that one.
Don't do the Polaroid.
In fact, if you're on the Polaroid one, undo it.
Do it. Make Nigel's life hell and sign up for the Polaroid. Okay, we'll see everybody in a second, and then see everybody else next week.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.